JC Corcoran Podcast.
There was an old farmer who lived by a rock. Sat in the meadow, was shaking his fist at some boys who were down by the creek. Feet in the water, their hands on their marbles and playthings. And in days of yore, they met a young maiden. She looked like a pretty young creature. She sat on the grass, pulled up her dresses to show us her ruffles and laces. With a white fluffy duck, said she was learning a new way to bring up her children and teach them to knit. While the boys in the barnyard were shoveling refuse and litter from yesterday's hunt, while the girl in the meadow was rubbing her eyes at the boys just like girls sometimes do, to make it quite clear that she wanted to go for a nice pleasant stroll on the grass and hurry back home for a nice piece of ice cream and cake that stood three layers tall. After dessert, she was ready to go for another walk down by the dock. But then a young man with a sizable roll of 100s and a big bulge up front, he'd ask politely, she'd show him her little pet dog that was subject to fits. He'd reach on over, grab hold of her small tender hands with the movement so quick. She'd bend on over and suck on his soda so sweetly till she finished it. And pull down her panties to rub on her hip that she bruised as she ran down the halls. Cause he tried to force her to lick on his candy so tasty made of butterscotch. And then he spread whipped cream all over her cookies that she had been baking all night. If you think this is dirty, you're f***ing well right.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
16th of July, 2021. The J.C. Corcoran Podcast here at jcontheline.com. If you have Cardinal baseball tickets for tomorrow or for Sunday, you're in for some very, very good news. The weather is supposed to be beautiful. The bad news is it's going to rain really, really hard in the St. Louis area this morning and into the early part of the afternoon. And then it'll probably tail off a little bit later on in the day and this evening, but it's going to be a very, very damp evening at Busch Stadium. People argue with me on this, and I'm not really sure why. I know that a lot of people would just want to watch a baseball game, and they just, you know, go Cardinals, and we hope you win, and all that sort of stuff. I really like it when I'm watching baseball. I'm a lifelong baseball fan, as you know, and I think I really know the game pretty well. And it's gotten to the point now that when Jim Edmonds is not the color commentator on Bally Sports Midwest, I'm very disappointed. Jim Edmonds has a way of conveying complicated information for baseball fans, and also he's great just sort of talking about what's going on that maybe you're not really seeing or that you're not looking for. And then he starts talking about, now watch this here, and you're like, oh gosh, I didn't even really think of that. And that's coming from somebody who really, really has paid a lot of very, very close attention to the game. So I'm really, really impressed with how good Jim Edmonds has gotten as a color commentator. That having been said, who's he trying to kid here?
You know, I think as you get a little bit older, it's not the kids, it's the noise. I think my ears are now more sensitive than they used to be. And I got two little boys that are twins, and they're three, and they're extremely loud. Well, one is extremely loud. The other one's a little bit more soft-spoken, but wow. When they get going.
I think your parents are saying payback can be tough, Jimmy.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I hear you. My oldest is getting that right now. Paybacks. My granddaughter is very noisy.
I think some people just heard you say, what?
Yep.
Granddaughter?
Yeah. 6 months old and loud. I'm keeping her in California a little bit longer. can't have another yelling one. I love it, though. It's so much fun. We go home. It's the best thing about doing the game from the studio. For me, I know it's hard. Sometimes we have trouble. You know, cameras aren't at the great angle all the time. We can't give you the best, but I get to go home every night to the family, and I love it. Take advantage of it while you can, or while I can.
He must think that the lawyers in his custody case are listening to the game. Jim, you're a great all-star center fielder and a great Cardinal, and you've blossomed into a terrific color commentator on TV, but you were having threesomes. And then without your wife's knowledge, you were boinking the babysitter. So you sound like you're trying a little too hard there, dude. But baseball resumes for the second half of the season starting tonight, and the Cardinals and the Giants at Busch Stadium. Well, I saw a movie in a movie theater for the first time in well over a year and a half. Yesterday, I say to my 11-year-old, you want to see the movie Black Widow? No, I don't like spiders. It's like, no. And then I had to explain to her what and who Black Widow was. And then you got to get a friend to go along, because there's no such thing as just going to the movie with dad anymore. You got to have a friend. So now you get the friend. So on the way there, we're hungry. Oh, okay. This is going to cost me even more. So we're going to stop at the food court. In the food court, you know, now they're racking up a bill of about $15, $16. Okay. Now we go into the theater. That's another $22 for the three of us. And we go in there. There are probably 20 people in the whole theater. And then Black Widow starts. And I just love these superhuman. This all started with the original Batman remake, the one with Michael Keaton, produced and directed by Tim Burton. You know, it had Robert Wall and Kim Basinger and all that. When we were all doing the interviews the next day after we saw the movie, the advanced screening out in California, going, okay, can Batman fly or not? And again, you have to put yourself in the mind of 1989, when the whole Batman thing is sort of, you know, restarting again. And now you're watching the movie, and it's like, well, now wait a minute here. He's sort of flying. And every reporter who asked Tim Burton and Michael Keaton that day, can Batman fly? The two of them looked at each other like, why is everybody asking us if Batman can fly? No, he can't fly. And it's like, well, then why don't you make a movie where, at the absolute minimum, he seems to be defying gravity a little bit? And then you had Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. And that one, they were clearly defying gravity. In fact, there's a climactic scene near the end of the film where you're like, okay, well, why didn't you just fly there? And I remember asking that to Roger Ebert in an interview we had once with Siskel and Ebert, and he's like, yeah, you know, you're right. It's like, yes, I know I'm right. So now you have that in the Black Widow movie. Well, first of all, I never miss an opportunity to embarrass my 11-year-old daughter, especially in front of her friends. So we go up to, go to the front of the theater yesterday, and I stand there, and I look up, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. And the little girl behind the counter is like, what's the matter? I go, I thought it was Black Weirdo. Oh, it's Black Widow, guys. You still want to go? And all three of them are looking at me like, huh? Like, well, I thought it was funny. So now you go in there, and again, you have a superhero appearing to be able to, I wouldn't say fly, but certainly defy gravity. And it's like, I understand the concept of the suspension of disbelief. When you go into a movie, you have to sort of suspend your disbelief. I totally get that. But at the same time, there sure are a lot of things in movies that would happen differently if the people making the movie just saying, well, I think right here the superhero should be able to defy gravity and sort of fly. And then you're like Saving Private Ryan would be a completely different movie if Tom Hanks could fly. Whatever you do, guys, when you're making movies in Hollywood, don't allow somebody like Rebel Wilson to be able to fly, because if something goes wrong and she crashes, it would produce an effect like when that asteroid hit Earth billions of years ago and killed all the dinosaurs. You can't be too careful. That's what I always say. All right, we got all that shark stuff going on. My wife and daughter were watching that stuff last night, Shark Week. Shark experts want us to stop using the term shark attacks. I've been saying this for years. We're in their house. When you go swimming, you're in the shark's house. So to me, it's not much different than in the middle of the night if you go traipsing through somebody's backyard and the guy in the house comes out with a gun because he thinks you're trying to rob him. You're in his territory. Same thing with sharks. You go out in the water, that's their house. So the shark experts want you to stop using the term shark attacks because it puts all the blame on the shark and it isn't accurate. Instead, they want us to say shark interactions. Yeah. If they lower you into the water in that cage to get video of sharks attacking and the shark bites the cage in half and almost gets you and you go swimming like a crazy ass to the top of the water and jump in the boat. Pull me in real quick. Pull me in. Why? What's the matter? I just had a shark interaction. And if you can't use that, they want you to say a negative encounter with a shark. Here's what they say if you're ever attacked by a shark. Don't panic. Why would I panic? I have an 800-pound killing machine with sharp teeth that can swim 10 times faster than me and thinks I'm a seal. That's the other thing I found out recently, that when a shark attacks you, it's because it thinks you're a seal. Talk about adding insult to injury. Not only am I missing my leg and my arm, but that's how fat I look in the water? Yeah, why would I panic? Panicking will put a shark in a predatory mode. Remember, just because a shark is around doesn't mean you're definitely going to get bit. Number two, make eye contact and be assertive. Hey, you, look at me. Who the hell you think you are? According to a shark expert, sharks respect assertiveness. If you see a shark in the water, he suggests making eye contact with it or even pushing it away. Number three, if the shark attacks, fight back. Punch and attack the shark however you can. The eyes, the nose, the gills are all good targets, and no matter what, don't play dead. That's the thing where you got to know which kind of bear you're being attacked by. Because I think there's one bear, like a black bear, that reacts differently than a brown bear to a victim playing dead. One of them will just continue to eat you, and the other one will say, oh, it's dead, and then walk away. I don't know which bear is which. Number four, assess your injuries. Well, I seem to be missing my arm. If that happens, keep it raised above your heart, which will slow the bleeding. This, by the way, as you're going into shock and almost drowning and bleeding to death, you'll have all of your complete faculties and be thinking very rationally, I'm sure. And my favorite bit of advice here, if you're attacked by a shark, how do they ever come up with this? Swim to shore and get help. After a shark bite, all that splashing and commotion and blood could attract other sharks that might be nearby, so get to solid ground, stop the bleeding, and get medical help. No, I thought it was going to hop over to the to the bar in the little cabana and have a couple of drinks, and then maybe after I've had my fill, I'll consider dialing 911. Speaking of other predatory animals, there's a mini golf course in Daytona Beach, Florida called Congo River that also has alligators you can feed. And yesterday morning, some guy stole one just after 3 o'clock in the morning. Police spotted a man fighting an alligator on the street, and it turned out he'd stolen it from the course. He's 32. His name is William Hodge, but he goes by Bubba. Well, there you go, right there. Do you really need to know anything else? A 32-year-old guy in Florida named Bubba fighting with an alligator at 3 a.m. Welcome to Florida. Police posted a photo of him being handcuffed, and the alligator looks fairly small, about 5 feet long. According to the police, cops saw him swinging it around by its tail and trying to toss it on the roof of a building. So they arrested him, and when they asked him why he was doing it, he said he was trying to teach the alligator a lesson. He also told them he jumped a fence into its enclosure and had to wrestle the gator for a while, but it sounds like it's okay, and it's back home now. We're talking about the alligator, not Bubba. Bubba, on the other hand, facing charges for theft, burglary, criminal mischief, and animal cruelty. Let's talk a little food here, or in this particular case, food-like substances. That Kraft mac and cheese ice cream was a huge hit. The site crashed within 9 minutes, and the entire 2,000-pint inventory was wiped out online within an hour. Now the only way to get your hands on it is a sweepstakes at macicecream.com. macicecream.com. 100 winners will receive 2 free pints. Don't even get me started on the mask situation or the, well, I was going to say the return of COVID. It never went away. And this will be another weekend where if you watch the news, all you're going to hear about is like the, you know, 900% increase in COVID cases and lots of people in the hospital and lots of people dying, lots of people on ventilators, and almost 100% of them not vaccinated. And now something else to worry about. And it's got a catchy name you won't forget. Did you suffer during the pandemic from dead butt syndrome? Dead butt syndrome, or DBS, is when you experience pain, numbness, or tingling in and around your butt muscles, and it's usually from sitting too much. Doctors have seen it a lot more since the pandemic hit because we've been less active and we've also been working from the couch, which doesn't help. Dead butt syndrome isn't a formal diagnosis. It's a catch-all term doctors use for various things that can make your butt feel like it's given up on you. If it's ever felt like your butt fell asleep, that's kind of what DBS is like. But if it happens just once in a while, your butt's fine. If it happens a lot, lasts more than an hour or two, you might have a dead butt on your hands. But we have good news. It's reversible and preventable. To reduce your risk of DBS, stand more. Geez, how am I going to remember that? She is America's sweetheart. She's an Oscar nominee and winner. She is a sweet gal, and I've had the pleasure of interviewing her on multiple occasions, and we're talking about Sandra Bullock.
The A-List Interview with JC and the Morning Show, Graham.
Actress Sandra Bullock on her movie Practical Magic.
What kind of a Halloween kid were you?
My mother made our costumes. And then as I got more extravagant with my ideas, my father had to start building them.
How extravagant can a Halloween costume get that dad has to be brought in, like with a blowtorch?
I love candy corn. And so I decided I wanted to be
here it comes
the
folks.
Human candy corn. So he built this huge candy corn and had these straps where when I flashed the flashlight, it said trick or treat. And it had a little flap door.
How do you carry a candy? Bag.
It was attached to the inside of the door where people put in the flap. I won.
Who, in 2005, made one of the biggest mistakes of her life when she married Jesse James, the neck tattooed douchebag of the Discovery Channel TV show Monster Garage. He left his first wife, the also neck tattooed porn tramp, Janine Lindemuller, to be with Sandra Bullock, but continued to cheat on Sandra. And at the same time, how is it possible to be married to somebody who's got Nazi memorabilia all over the place and not know it? There's just something missing from this story. Oh, I know. Guys hide things from women all the time in marriages, and sometimes they get away with it. But how does this sweet, very well-scrubbed-looking actress from a very, very good family in the Washington, D.C. area, and you know, she goes out and marries this guy who looks like he was born in a Petri dish. Something is missing from this story. All right, birthdays on Friday today, because a lot of people binge listen to the J.C. Corcoran podcast on the weekend, so I got to get my bearings here. Carly Lloyd, the soccer Olympian, 39. Will Ferrell, 54. Phoebe Cates, who is just as beautiful and lovely in person as she is on the screen, married to St. Louis homeboy Kevin Kline. She's 58 today. Michael Flatley, Lord of the Dance, who grew up about 6-7 miles from me on the south side of Chicago. He's full of crap. 63. One of the biggest douchebags I've ever met in my life. And I've met plenty. Actor, comedian, Kevin Pollak. Screech from Saved by the Bell. There have been plenty of others. But Stuart Copeland, drummer for The Police. We had him on the show back in 1990 in Los Angeles. What a jackass. 69 today. Jimmy Johnson, former coach of the Dallas Cowboys, 78. St. Louis homeboy Alex Winter, having a birthday tomorrow from U City, 56. The Hoff, David Hasselhoff, 69. Geezer Butler, another guy who lived in St. Louis for a long time, from Black Sabbath, 72. Donald Sutherland, 86. On Sunday, Kristen Bell, who also has a St. Louis connection because her dad, Tom Bell, was the assistant news director at Channel 4 when I was there back in the 1990s, and she was just a little baby back then, but she's 41 today. Vin Diesel, 54. Richard Branson, 71. Steve Forbes, who ran for president a couple of times, 74. Martha Reeves, minus her Bandellas, is 80 today. Joe Torre, another St. Louis connection, 81. James Brolin, married to Barbara Streisand, 81. And Dion, as in Runaround Sue, The Wanderer, and also Abraham, Martin, and John. Dion is 82 on Sunday. Here's a weird one. NBC offered James Gandolfini $4 million to join the cast of The Office after Steve Carell left. But HBO didn't want him to do it, so they paid him $3 million to turn it down. Here's $3 million to not work. Socialism, I tell you. Socialism. And if you're tired of the voice of Alexa, you can now hear that same information via the voice of Shaquille O'Neal or Melissa McCarthy. They joined Samuel L. Jackson, who's been an option since 2019. Today on Hulu, the premiere of Paul McCartney, 321, six-episode limited series where Paul McCartney and producer Rick Rubin talk about Paul's career. And I've seen a couple of clips of this, and it's gotten my attention. Let's put it that way. It's Schmigadoon, Schmigadoon, which obviously is a play on words from Brigadoon, which I think every high school had to perform at one point or another. Anyhow, this is on Apple TV. It's a musical comedy starring Keegan-Michael Key and SNL's Cecily Strong as a couple who get trapped in a 1940s musical until they can find true love. It has my attention. AC/DC releasing two signature beers, one of which will have an alcohol content of 6.66%. I get it. And two people checked out on this date. 40 years ago today, 1981, Harry Chapin was killed when his car was struck by a tractor trailer on New York's Long Island Expressway. And 22 years ago today, 1999, JFK Jr., his wife Carolyn, and her sister Lauren died when John John's single-engine plane crashed into the ocean near Martha's Vineyard. 2 years later, the Kennedy family agreed to pay the Bessettes $15 million for the loss of their daughters. John John was not trained, nor did he have any sort of experience or enough hours in the cockpit flying at night. They got started late in their takeoff on their trip, so it was already dark when he was trying to land. And they say at one point he may have been flying upside down because apparently, you know, if you don't have the experience and your instruments are telling you one thing and your brain is telling you something else, it's apparently not that uncommon for planes to end up upside down in a situation where the pilot is under duress of some sort. Of course, the QAnon people believe that John John is still alive and harvesting children's body parts in the basement of that pizza joint in New Jersey, even though the building doesn't have a basement. But why get hung up on details? I don't know if you saw the story yesterday. The dress that Judy Garland wore from The Wizard of Oz has been missing since 1976. And a couple of days ago, they found it in Lindsey Graham's closet.
Good morning, everybody.
Janet Jones and Wayne Gretzky. Janet Jones, of course, from North County, got married to Wayne Gretzky on this date back in 1988. And it was on, the 18th, which is what, Sunday? Yeah, Sunday. Back in 1997, it was me and Roger Daltrey at the Ritz-Carlton in Clayton as The Who was getting ready to perform out at, well, let's see, 97. It might have still been the Riverport Amphitheater. But went up to the Ritz-Carlton with the television camera. We set up, and I'm telling you, Roger Daltrey could not have been any nicer. Just a prince of a guy. And here on the anniversary of that interview, we flash back. It's JC's A-list celebrity interview of the day.
33 years, approximately, the band's still performing, and people ask me why. Why are these guys still performing? What would give them the desire after 33 years to still go out and do this? Now, I think I know the answer, but you tell me.
Well, I want to know your answer. It might be more interesting.
Well, honest to God, my answer is that these guys are musicians. It's what they do. What do you want them to do? Open a McDonald's?
No, that is one of the reasons. I mean, we are musicians, that's what we do, but it's not the only reason, and we're still pioneering. The Who were always a group that went out on a limb. We came out with Tommy in 1969, and people raised their hands sometimes in delight, mostly in horror, because it was about a deaf, dumb and blind kid, which in those days, you know, you didn't talk about those kind of things. And here we are again in 1997, still pioneering. It's a very different show. We're trying to push the boundaries of rock and roll all the time, and as long as we're doing that, I feel it's a valid reason to be out there doing it.
Supposedly there's kind of a St. Louis connection to The Who. Now, if we have the story right, a guy by the name of Bob Heil, here in the St. Louis area, somewhat profoundly changed the way we all see, and especially the way we hear, concerts in terms of the overall sound system and the amount of wattage that you pull. Just fill in the blanks for me on this story.
We were the originators of the Marshall equipment. I mean, Marshall made the original Marshall 4x2 guitar amp for The Who. So, you know, we came over here in the 60s with that gear and that cord on. We came to St. Louis and this guy, Bob Heil, said, I can make better stuff than that. And he made Hi-Wat. And it was better, actually.
And pretty soon.
But still, you see the people out there today with Marshall. But I mean, you're all being fooled. I was better.
I've read books that use the term madman to describe Keith Moon, who, of course, didn't make it. He didn't survive the experience. Has history been fair to Keith Moon?
I don't think history really knows Keith Moon. I don't think the general public actually know much about Keith Moon, only the mad side of him. He was an incredibly complex character. I'm in the middle at the moment of actually producing a film on his life, which I hope will get to grips with what Keith Moon was really all about. I mean, he was the funniest man I've ever met in my life.
The funniest man?
Funniest. And I mean,
and you say complex, and do you know the reason for the complexity?
God almighty. If we knew that, he'd probably still be here today, because we could have talked to him in a way that he would have liked to have been talked to. But I mean, he was everything in excess. He was the most generous, the most selfish, the most lavish, the most mean, and he was the most fun, and he can also be the most horrid. But everything was enormously over the top. He used to hang around with the Monty Python crowd. In fact, I'm sure they used to walk behind him, writing down Keith Moon's life and turning it into their shows, because his life was like their shows.
I mean, really, I guess somewhere you have to research and find out if Keith liked Spam.
But I mean, I asked those guys, I said, tell me the truth, you know, have you ever, because they're funny guys, I mean, John Cleese is a funny man, have you ever met anyone who made you laugh like Keith Moon did? And without doubt, the answer always comes back, no. Never in our lives have we met anyone who comes close. He was just extraordinary. But he had an incredible dark side. I mean, the other side of the coin was as black as the funny side. You know, in black terms, it was very dark.
Another landmark event for The Who was the Cincinnati concert in 1980. Fans crushed to death trying to get into a concert using the old festival seating, which was over from that point forward. And I'm not sure that the average fan in the arenas that you play understands sometimes the distance between the band and the promoters. And that while it will always be remembered as the Cincinnati Who concert, that you guys probably would wish that somehow that wouldn't have happened and that would all go away.
Well, of course you wish it wouldn't have happened. I mean, we knew nothing about it at all until the end of the show. I mean, from the front, it happened before the show started. It happened at 7:30 in the evening, and we weren't even in the hall. The band weren't even at the venue when it happened. But they didn't know what to do. It was a bad situation, which they felt at the time, because they had, you know, a large crowd inside. They had these people suffering in one of the doorways. They didn't open enough of the doorways for the crowd to get in. They made the decision that it was better to let the concert go on. I mean, and if, let's be honest, if they'd have told us what had happened before we had arrived at the show, I don't know whether we could have gone on. So that might have turned a bad situation into a worse one. It's very difficult, and of course it's one of those things you live with all your life, and if you could change it, you would, but unfortunately you can't. That is part of life.
Let's shift gears a little bit. The principal members, John, yourself, and Pete, you can't have guys having done this for as long as you have without distinct personalities emerging. Just talk a little bit about who's who in the Who, if we want to start playing with words here.
I'm bitchy in it.
who's the guy most likely, for example, to get a laugh from everybody?
John. John is incredibly witty. Got a very, very dry sense of humor.
Who's the guy that's the voice of reason in the band?
I don't know whether there is one.
Last honest man in America. Why bother with stuff like that? Well, just talk a little bit about the individual personalities and how that manifests itself for the band.
Pete, is a great bunch of fellas. He's a genius, and living with that genius, you know, it's like tiptoeing through a minefield with giant boots on when you're dealing with Pete. I mean, that's how he is. You know, you never know which one you're going to get. I try and be the guy who kind of grounds it, keeps it with at least some kind of anchor to terra firma.
I'm told that you're a half-decent farmer. Is that true?
I'm a very good farmer. Half-decent, yeah.
Tell me about
that. In the 70s, when it all went, we were like 25 years old, and the whole world was at our feet. I mean, you can't imagine what it would be like. We had hit records. Everywhere we went in the world, it was like people going crazy for you. The money was beyond your wildest dreams. We didn't realise what we were earning. We were just spending, I mean, as fast as we got it, we spent it, it all disappeared, you know. But it was an insane lifestyle. And I suddenly realised that, you know, that I was could very easily go completely out of control. And I'd moved to the country and started farming, and I met people that were exactly the opposite to showbiz people. Country people were really, they've got something I wish I had it. I haven't got it. I need to be out there. I can do it for a while, but then I have to get out there, back in the firing line, back to be sniped at. You know, there's something about living on the edge that I still need. These people don't need it. They just go through their life and they live with the seasons, and I really admire that. And that gave me a balance. It was just really like yin and yang. You know?
Do you ever think about how your life would have turned out and how everything for you would have been different had the band not come along? And I guess what, when they found you, you were a sheet metal worker or something?
They didn't find me, I found them.
Yeah.
It's my band, yeah. I used to make the guitars. I mean, listen, there's no way this wasn't going to happen. let me tell you. When you've worked in a factory for 5 years, you know, and you play any kind of music and you're halfway decent, and then you end up with someone like Townsend, and you think, how about this guy's writing some good stuff here? There's no way I was not going to let it work and make it work. You know?
Have a great time here in St. Louis, Roger Daltrey. A pleasure to talk to you.
And you.
What a fascinating discussion with the lead singer of The Who, Roger Daltrey. And that's it. Another J.C. Corcoran podcast is in the can here at jcontheline.com. Binge listen anytime. Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We're all over the place. And you know how to find me. And please spread the word, as you have been continuing to do, that we are here with the podcast every weekday morning. We post at 7 a.m. Monday through Friday. You enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you again on Monday. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.